Welcome to Passion to Power with your host, Michelle Zeitlin. She's a creative producer who quote-unquote wears many hats. She's also a talent and literary manager and founded the company Morzap Productions and Management. She develops people and projects across all media. Her guests encompass the gamut, from artists to authors, actors to activists. Please welcome Michelle Zeitlin, Passion to Power.
I have the distinct pleasure of interviewing Jenny Reeder. She is a Brit by way of Nashville, even though she's a big shot in the music industry and was mentioned in Billboard's Indie Power Player list in 2019. She considers herself a chief ideation officer. She's going to tell us all about her adventures in the record business and how she develops artists, gets behind them.
My name is Jenny Reeder, and I'm a chief ideation officer.
So let's start out with a little bio. So I hope I gave honorable mention, but why don't you fill in the holes? Like, how does one become a chief ideation officer?
Well, number one, it helps to run your own business, and you can give yourself whatever title you want. I used to say, as I was making my through kind of accidentally the ranks in the music business, I'm not someone who ever really desired to be climbing any particular ladders, but I always would tell the executives in the business or whoever the higher ups were that titles mean everything to those who have nothing and nothing to those who have everything. So it seemed like the higher you get in any kind of business, the less it kind of means anything. But when you're starting out and you're kind of getting your way through your career or whatever else you're doing, it means a lot. So I really took my cues from the staff I had around me and not just myself, but like I was always very keen to make sure that they were reflected very accurately. But yes, right now I can give myself whatever I want. I wanted Imagineer, but it seems to be taken by Disney. So I guess I will hope to be the quick summation of how I got here in the first place. I always had a fascination with America since I was maybe 10. I grew up in the countryside of England. I went to university in London, and I stayed on in London after I finished university. I was initially in editorial and publishing. So I guess I can say this now. I think I told you this before. I never really talked about it too much because all my years in music, it didn't seem relevant, but I guess it's very relevant now. I was in children and teen magazines for about 4 or 5 years. I was working in Disney magazines, and then I was editor of Barbie magazine in England, which now is cool. So that's where I get all my love for pink, I guess, in the background for those who can't see, it's not pink. But yes, I moved into the music industry almost 2 decades ago now. I started in music television and made the hop to independent record labels. I was running the UK office of an independent record label called Victory Records. They're based in Chicago. I made the jump to America in 2008. I ended up heading up the marketing and publicity department at Victory. So I started at Fearless in 2009, and I was there for about 11 years. Like I said, I wasn't necessarily intending on doing anything but a damn good job. I had such a passion for independent music, particularly, you know, when I started in the record label side of things. It was everything I thought it would be. Like, you'd think, oh, glamorous. And I'm like, nope. No, I really didn't think it was glamorous. The first office I worked in was literally probably as big as here, with piles high of boxes, posters, CDs, all that other type of stuff. And I just thought it was the best thing, most exciting thing ever, because I guess part of my spirit has been very scrappy and DIY, and I absolutely love that in indie labels. Fearless certainly started that way, and credit to Bob Becker, who I know you know well, for having, you know, the spirit of starting a record label in the back of his trunk, selling albums of his friend's music and his music, and then making it into a bona fide massive business. I mean, it's an incredible story of when it all goes right and you know what you're doing, or at least you pretend. No offense, Bob, that's what we all do. But like, you love what you're doing, you have passion for what you're doing, and then you hope that it ends up turning into something, you know, really powerful, which Fearless obviously did. They had a lot breakout in 2008, just before I started, with Hey There, Delilah, which is Pearl and White Teaser's record, which is many, many times platinum now. And I started there on the sort of like the back of that boom. So they were able to expand from about 6 people in a warehouse to an actual real office with, you know, people outside of their network of people that they'd met amazingly drew in to make this amazing thing happen. So we were the very much crux of emo and punk and kind of rock in general as a broader sphere of music, ending up being bought by Concord in, I'm going to get it wrong, 2015 is the date I have, but apologies if anyone Wikipedia's this, they'll get it incorrect. And so Concord also allowed Fearless, of course, a much, much bigger remit. I mean, they have incredible success under their belts, multiple frontline labels, a ton of catalog, publishing, musical theater, my personal favorite, all at play, like within their big sort of powerhouse. And so it definitely changed the dynamic of what Fearless was, but there's also amazing, you know, successes and the bands and everything else that we managed to take from being sort of developing artists into, you know, Grammy nominated, golden platinum selling artists is no mean feat for a genre that often gets considered not as popular as pretty much every other genre out there. So yes, I started as a publicist. I worked my way to product manager. I ended up being co-president of the label with Andy Soraya, who still is there doing an amazing job. I found as I went up the ranks, I guess I got to do less of the creative stuff that I absolutely adore and I'm really hopefully good at. So it was kind of accidental that I ended up going into business for myself. I wasn't even sure that I was going to go stay in music. I had had such a long run, like 16 years without a break of just, I felt like I just needed a complete reset. But if you look at the timeline, it was the pandemic hitting just as I went into my own little sphere, and it gave me a complete reset, maybe unplanned, but it was awesome. I loved, sorry for everyone, I had a horrible time. I had a really good time. I didn't find a moment of zen. I didn't take up yoga. I didn't do any of those things. I just kind of reconnected with what I actually really loved about helping artists, smaller labels. I went into consulting, and now I'm in artist management and a whole room of other sort of projects on the side, which has been pretty amazing just to see. I just kind of like let it flow, and it's just amazing how many people have come out the woodwork and all these amazing artists and people that I get to work with now. So yes, that is a little more long-winded way of saying kind of how I got here.
Nashville used to be known as sort of the country capital.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's across the board in so many genres. There's people, yep, every type of music working, yep, in Nashville. And I don't think that had everything to do with the pandemic, people wanting to get out of LA. I would love to get a day in the life of Jenny Reeder. And let me even clarify it further, because when people say things like artist management, that can mean so many things. Mm-hmm. You say things like publicity, that can mean so many things. And like you said, you can make up your own title when you have your own company. So from a Jenny Reeder standpoint, let's cut that pie. How much is how much of each piece of pie? And what exactly on the daily are you doing for your different clients?
It's funny because I was literally talking to a really good friend of mine who is still in the music business, but she used to be a co-worker in at Fearless for the longest time, the entire time I was there. And I was just saying that it feels like right now I'm working on so many different things that I think this particular pie is maybe a bunch of ingredients, like rather than just even slices. But I mean, so just today, for example, Mondays, I know everyone has their own, you know, avalanche of things that happens on a Monday, but I started out by having a call with my main artist, Starset, their lawyer, attorney, and going through a whole bunch of different things there's a million projects they're working on. So there was lots of things to discuss. So I had a very good conversation around all of that. I am in the current process of navigating them through a book writing, songwriting, new label deal, which is old label deals, so they've re-up with Fearless. Yes, we have a lot of creative and a whole bunch of things, touring. We have a lot of things that we're kind of working on with them, which kind of started my day. And then it kind of pivoted into, I'm also simultaneously launching a merch brand, which sounds rather random for a Monday, but I've been navigating doing that myself. And I have to say, my main conversation with Heather, the lady I was talking about, was I've spent my career making others look good, let's put it that way, and really pouring my energies into that. And that just sounds obnoxious, but like I spend so much of my creativity and energy like helping other people's dreams become a reality that this is just like one drop in the ocean for me, but it happens to be coming into Halloween. You can tell that I might be on the spooky side. And I had a long standing idea for a brand called Morning Brew, spelled morning as in mourning the loss of someone. And it's hilarious because I get to write punny descriptions of clothing. So you're like, okay, that's weird. I'm also prepping for my first day of classes resuming at the University of South Carolina, which starts tomorrow. I'm an adjunct remote teacher in music industry. I have two classes, one in the morning, one in the later day. So I prepped and ready to go, but I just wanted to make sure I was set up in their system. So there's a lot of academia stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much today. But then on any given moment, as you mentioned, it is interesting. So artist management to me always feels like it was my stable dream of something that I would end up doing beyond being in a record label in recorded music, because I wouldn't just be, and again, this makes me sound like a control freak, but it's not really that. It's more a case of I'd be able to be a part of the entire pie, there you go, of an artist's career and not just the recorded version. Like, you know, there's that, which is so, I mean, I see on the outside how pivotal that part is to absolutely everything. You can't do much without having something that people are going to listen to. But being able to have hands in all the other parts of particularly Starset's business, which is incredible, like just such a, I mean, to have a space pun, it's because they're a space sort of themed concert band. They have so many different pieces of what they're doing between the plans for a mini series and a video game, maybe a movie down the line. They have like the books, the graphic novels. It's just so amazing for me because I get to use literally every skill I've probably ever had and put it into this amazing one big project. But so artist management for me isn't just me and my partner Ryan working on that actual business, you know, making the money, making sure that the stage show they want to put on will fit on the stage with the booking agent. You know, we're doing all of that stuff, the what I would call the official stuff, but we're also, you know, how can we create? there's so I'm the weird creative brain behind stuff too, that is able to channel a lot of the things I understand about marketing and weaving a story, which the singer Dustin is just the mastermind at. So I get to kind of do a lot of amazing creative stuff on that side. So yeah, so the artist management for me is more of a holistic piece. It's not just making sure this artist makes money, which I'm hoping everyone does. It's more a building out of the pieces around an artist that enables them to do everything if they wanted to. You know, this band happens to have, you know, an incredible label that will have lots of resources for them, an incredible booking agent that again will have lots of resources for them, but with so much going on at the center, they need more than just us telling what everyone else should do. You know, it's just like there's just a lot more, which is perfect for me because I would be spinning around in my chair like needing to put my creative energy somewhere. Yes, it's a lot. And I have probably a million other projects in there too, but I'm actually making them happen. So it doesn't feel like I'm just talking up things that don't exist. So there you go.
We call that manifestation.
Yes. Yes. You know, and I'm not necessarily like going to start spieling on about like if you put it out into the universe, but too often I've found that to be the case. And I think that what it really means is that you start holding yourself accountable, you know, like, you should always be kind on yourself, never put too much pressure on yourself, says she. But I think that when you start talking out loud about things you want to do, or you're putting it out there, but you're also kind of like reminding yourself that this is something you can do. So that bit I believe in.
I read a good Brené Brown quote today, which I'll sabotage, so I won't say it, but I'll paraphrase that essentially every time we put out the courage, we put out the courage for other people as well. You know, once we enable ourselves with that self-awareness, you become a little bit selfish so you can be selfless. You can serve others when you can become more focused on what you want to do.
Yeah, that's so true. So true.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the us and them, not the current pronouns of they and them, but the us and them when we used to talk about the big labels versus the indie small artist. And there was this idea of, God's, you know, almost fear, to use fearless as a little analogy, of going against the machine, right? Like, when do you choose a label? When do they choose you? When do you accept that entree? And having a daughter in the music business, it's been very interesting to see how much she had to push up the hill all on her own with this DIY band. And then people really, like you said, once you put out good music, people start to find you. And then you have to navigate the business side that you've always wished was there knocking, but it can become incredibly both complicated and convoluted.
Yes. So
can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to also say your daughter and Honey Revenge are very talented. So you're blessed and they're awesome. So they definitely did the grind, but they've got... And
by the way, going the first UK tour and I'm going to be in London.
Yes. So all right. Well, this is awesome. Well, I would say that now, to answer your question, it's definitely, as the music industry constantly evolves, and there's no way, it's always changing. We're in the middle of a bigger sea change than we probably have been in for a while. I mean, it's been kind of like there since streaming became the thing about a decade ago, which obviously was the ushering in of the digital age with MP3s and Napster and God knows all that other stuff, which is just, it's a delight to teach, I will say. I absolutely love that era because it's such a mess. You know, there's no way around it. And that's why I like it, because it was chaotic, because it was blundered across the whole industry. And they missed their opportunity to put a value, a monetary value onto music. And it was hilarious just kind of being at the start of my career and going, well, this is a mess, isn't it, as a fan. But I would say that as an artist now, you know, and as, you know, former record label, now kind of really understanding the full scope of where recorded music and its entities kind of sit, you know, a record label, slightly to all of the wonderful ones out there, less relevant than probably ever has been. Doesn't mean to say you don't need them, but there are several pieces within both sides that are very important. As a record label, you need to be establishing what your value is and how you add value to the artist. Like, your only job really, regardless of bottom line and everything else, is to make the band or artist more successful than they would have been doing it on their own. Because with that, and it should be something that they smartly go into, like, artists do need to give away a chunk of rights and, you know, a chunk of their revenue, certainly to start off with. Now, if you're all successful, you're going to be successful, fingers crossed, together, and be better off than you would have done if you did it on your own. Your biggest challenge as an artist doing it on your own now is that it's easier than it ever has been. It's cheaper to be able to do it, but there's so much more out there. Like, as I constantly talk about, like, the noise that you're trying to cut through is just insane. So you really have to have a really good team around you. And I kind of say it to artists that are either up and coming or established, and they, you know, that everyone has questions regardless of what part of your career you're in. If you're like just starting out, or if you're mega established, you can probably do this on your own, because if you are just starting out, it's going to be really hard now for a label, unless they're a smaller one, a boutique label, or someone who really focuses on the niche of music that you're in. It's going to be harder for them to kind of prioritize you when they know how much of a lift there is against everything else. And if you're able to, and it's exhausting as an artist, I totally see this, but like, if you're able to establish yourself on socials, gain a bit of a following, play, you know, if you're an artist that has a live career in front of you, make sure you're taking over your immediate area, not worrying about who's listened to you in Brazil at this moment in time, but concern yourself with your hometown, how many people you can draw there, you know, hop on tours as they come through if you can. You know, it's all about the metrics, unfortunately. And if you're looking for a label deal, as in you're looking for a bigger team of people to help put funding into what you're doing, to put resources, to put, you know, the smarts into it, which I love the word smarts because it sounds so non-intelligent, but I like it. You know, you've got people who know what they're doing that are going to help elevate what you're doing. If you're going to, you know, do all of that, you really have to have things that they can get their teeth sunk into, you know. Well, who are your followers? Don't worry about your monthly listeners, but who's following you on Spotify? That's real fans, real engaged fans. You know, what's your engagement like? You know, how many people can you draw in your hometown? You're really establishing yourself as an artist with some kind of reason for people to care, you know? And at that point, it is hard, because as a musical artist, we are not particularly wired to be able to do all of that stuff, let alone sign yourself up with a performing rights as organization and make sure you're being paid for everything. I mean, gosh, there's so much you have to handle on the business side, which makes it kind of important as you kind of start establishing yourself to get a team around you that can take some of that off of your plate, which is why, you know, when on an artist management side, we think about it not just making sure you get paid, like you said, like making money, but like making sure you can just concentrate on the pieces that you really need to do, which is ultimately making music and presenting yourself to the world and not going straight for burnout because you're worried about that TikTok that didn't fly that week. You know, it's challenging, but it is something you have to kind of grind at to make sure you've got some perceived value to the people coming in. And if you're interested in a record label deal, you know, first target the type of folks that you want. You know, like, don't just go for a major possibility because there's so much out there that is competing for that space. You know, think carefully about who's making a difference. What other artists do you like that's in your similar vein that has a body of people that are helping them do that? You know, your mid-tier or just getting started out and getting somewhere bands really will benefit from having either an extended management team, I would say, or a label. And I love teaching from textbooks on my classes. I'm shaking my head because it's really interesting teaching real-time university college level classes when I'm actually like embedded in the industry on a minutely basis, because I read the text and I'm like, oh, no, that's not the case. And I'm only really saying this because when you say the big bad, like big great record labels, you know, a lot of it labels on about 360 deals, and I'm like, okay, well, you have a choice not to sign that. And also, they don't really get presented these days, because why would you give all of your rights away? You know, there's a lot of changes having to go on from the label side to allow these deals to be a bit more lucrative and appealing to artists, which I love, not necessarily retaining your rights forever and ever. If you are going to retain their rights, because catalog is such a massive, massive thing for labels now, you have to compensate better. So it's a bit of a learning process on both sides. But yes, I've wandered off the topic slightly, but I would definitely say that if you're interested in still obtaining that dreamy record label deal, you know, be smart about what you're actually looking for. And definitely, you know, don't jump into anything because you have options, obviously, to do it yourself. You just will probably reach a moment where it's going to be too much to do it yourself well.
In my own work, Jenny, I always feel like it's the people who haven't made any money yet are holding it the tightest to their vest. You tell them you're taking 15% of something, and it sounds like this humongous amount, but they've done nothing. They have no traction. They have no footprint in the industry.
Yeah.
As a partnership, you start to create that. And it's interesting. My most successful clients are the most generous and so fast to write a check or, you know, send a vendor or sell, because they're so excited that there's money coming in and being generated by the machine that we create all together, right?
Yeah, it's definitely challenging in that respect. I've seen it certainly from a, you know, management, office management perspective, because when you're in your early days, like that 15% seems huge because you're not making that much. And so like, we could do this on our own, but the trouble is, you know, the big thing is that if you're trying to partner with anyone, you're supposed to, you know, you should be in a position where you truly believe in what they're doing. And, you know, a lot of labels, a lot of managers obviously don't make money in the instance. It feels like not so much managers, but, you know, everyone thinks that like the big bad label comes in and takes all their money, but it's like, record labels lose money on nearly every artist that they sign. Now they might make it up in time, thanks to the catalog and stuff, but you know, it's a risk taken on all sides. And what you're really doing is investing, because, you know, at the end of the day, you're not paying up front for someone's services, you know, like creating a website or something. You're in a partnership, as you said, where you're creating value together. And the idea, just like a record label, is that you partner with, you know, management or whoever, and they will increase your value. So you'll all be in a position where, you know, you're in a much better spot than you were before. But yeah, you're right. It's tricky starting off and trying to justify, you know, where these little chunks of pie might go.
So since you're an adjunct professor as well, it's very interesting that you're teaching this in real time. And I would imagine those books are pretty damn dated. My question also is steering, you know, the young artists forward, there's so much that technology, you know, we're so embedded in the technology aspect. You know, how do you as a teacher also sort of suss out that talent and engage beyond, you know, the teaching so they get a grade? Like, do you find that you become like a mentor to some of these potential artists?
Yeah, actually, I've been teaching for a year now, so it's not the longest time, but this will be my third semester. I'm obviously not a trained professional in terms of teaching. And everyone's like, what? Why is she in academia? I love writing essays and tests with my friends, so I am that person. But I will say that, you know, I've obviously been in the business long enough to be able to have the equivalent in professional experience. And I absolutely love sharing knowledge as I'm going along, as it makes sense, because I don't want... I think teaching will be a profession for me properly in like 10, 15 years time, where I, you know, where I really dedicate something. But it was an accidental sort of happenstance, I guess, way of me sort of stepping into some teaching through University of South Carolina, who are doing amazing work with their music industries program. Shout out to Jeremy Polly particularly, who will be stoked, because you should be getting credit for everything they're doing over there. It's an amazing program, and they've got a combination of real life experience plus, you know, some amazing people that really are living and breathing, being in music industry and not necessarily just reading it from my beloved book. So I'm not going to name the books just in case I get insulted. Sorry, people. No, the books are honestly great. But what I found starting out was it was really challenging to read a static text and understand, like you said, that the advent of technology more now than ever. Yep. You know, I'm staring at a book, right? I'm literally staring at it. I'm willing it off the shelf. But it's not a bad book at all. But does it contain the letters A and I in there? Of course it doesn't. So, you know, you have to do a reprint. It's expensive. It takes some time. And, you know, I'm all about, like, internet research and all of this other stuff. But there's a million brilliant articles out there on a daily basis that, you know, can be combined. In terms of mentorship and all that other stuff, I have been a mentor through Grammy U, which is a Recording Academy's program for universities, which is incredible. And on a flip side, but even more incredible, I would say, Diversify the Stage, which is a nonprofit led by the amazing, there you go, Noelle Skaggs from Fits in the Tantrums, who I guess during the pandemic, or at least I found out about it then, started this nonprofit. So she essentially created this nonprofit to have more diversity within live production, live performance, all this other stuff. I was a mentor last year for two incredible students. I'm saying incredible again, but it was just so enlightening for me doing that. And then on the university basis, seeing some students that had incredible, I'm saying it again, like amazing talent, but not for academia necessarily. You know, like that was the thing that really got me about teaching is that, yeah, some people were submitting really great work. Like there's no way around it. But some people were falling so behind that had it been left to drift, their grades would not be reflective at all about how great they are. Like I would hire three or four of them right now because they're that good, you know, and it doesn't match with their output within the school system. So, you know, it's been really interesting in that manner. I do say at the beginning of every semester, so I'm sure, you know, my students, some of them are repeats. So like, they come into one class, they do the intro, and then they'll come back for whatever, you know, my secondary class this semester is a music seminar class, so we get to talk about the topics of the day, like, and there's plenty of them, AI, obviously, and, you know, the struggles with ticketing, the advent of technology and its impact on music, all this other stuff, and I see some of my students from my last semester are back in this one, so it's definitely great to see the trajectory of them, but I really do offer them at the beginning of the semester, like use this class and my resources smartly, because if you're just showing up just to check things off of a list or whatever and then go, you're really messing this up. Because I'm not saying that, you know, you just happen to have a really good situation where you have someone that's living and breathing this stuff rather than it just being, you know, someone who's maybe not lived and breathed, or they're reading it from a book. You know, you can actually ask questions that, you know, are happening right now. So like it's you know, I ask them all to like really lean on the resources that we have as a kind of unit within the department. And it's definitely interesting for me because I will literally do something in the morning and then I'll be teaching it in the afternoon because I'm like, all right, I have a real life example exactly right now.
Like, what do you think those inherent characteristics and skills are? What do you pick out from your students now and in this business that is so changing? Like you say, just a huge turn of sea. You might have used a different phrase, but since I have an artist who just wrote a song, Tennessee, about movies.
Nice.
Yeah. Tell me, you know, what do you think some of those skills and special characteristics are that you need to survive in this business?
I think that number one, being proactive and not being afraid to put yourself out there is probably the first piece. You know, the students that ask me questions always get flagged up by me immediately because, again, if it's different, it's difficult teaching remotely. I definitely, when I get to go on campus, it's really great because I get to kind of understand the students much better. And I definitely have seen different skill sets come out when they're not necessarily just sitting in front of a screen. I mean, the caliber of your work that you deliver on assignments is fine, but like usually it's the ones that come and seek me out. They will come and meet with me if I'm at the university. They will come and stay after class. They'll ask me questions. They'll, you know, be proactive about internships or information. And, you know, that ability to not be afraid to put yourself out there is probably the number one piece in the industry generally. You know, the official training to do things, they're like hands-on in the studio. They're actually learning from actual real people in the industry about the, you know, the experiences that they have and teaching classes. And then they go out there and, you know, volunteer at festivals and have they, it's just, it's really great what they're building, you know, in terms of the local scene, not necessarily, although I will say there's a really increasingly popular metal scene in Columbia, South Carolina, which is surprising, but just down the road in Charleston, same, it's like hip hop and stuff. It's definitely more than I thought it would be. You know, you hear about these big music towns, like you said, Austin and Seattle for the old stuff and Nashville now, which is not just country, as you mentioned. It is definitely a whole wave of tons of different genres kind of like having their own scenes now, which is really exciting to see. But yeah, it's not necessarily the place as it is maybe the people. I think everyone says that, right? But like, there's just a good core of the spirit to try and make this thing valuable. It's very expensive to get to university. And certainly now, the question mark would be raised, just like labels, I suppose. What's the point? Do I need to do this? Could I get the same experience by doing another path? And it's like, if you come out and you've got a much better shot at employment and just generally be more aware of what you maybe want to do at the next stage of your life, then, you know, that's the big part, I think.
I think especially with these types of very specific genre-pointed studies, you know, like the Musicians Institute or like you said, Berklee School of Music, when you go to these, you're already kind of putting yourself in a very strong position with working some of the best people in the industry. If they're not your direct teachers, they're probably on the board or they're checking in or, you know, they're aware and there's always sort of a lift up. I don't know how much my daughter really benefited from the academic side, but she benefited just by the experiential side, getting up every day on that mic and having to produce sound and produce, you know, for the audience and getting all of the cobwebs out again and, you know, and being brave.
Stay true to you, because honestly, that age group, as much as it had its ups and downs to me, just like every, you know, the younger teen years were very strugglesome. Then I came into my own 16 to 18, kind of lost my confidence a bit when I went to big old London at 18, 19. Then I got back into my stride a bit. I'd be like, just keep going, because every quirky, weird piece that makes you this unique entity, you know, is what will make you special. And, you know, your passion for anything that you love, but also specifically music, is going to really be the only North Star that you need. You know, I definitely know that. I think one piece I would say is, you think that like there's a million of you out there, like, and there's not. I can verify at this particular age that there's absolutely not. And again, it sounds obnoxious, remember the good and the bad, but I'm like, no, I'm very much a unique individual. So just keep going, you know, like, just, and always be true to, you know, yourself, because I've never been necessarily in it for the money. I've always hopefully been in it for the right reasons. But the times where I feel it took me a little bit aside was when I was, you know, trying to overly establish what I'm doing, like almost like I've never had to shout about what I do. I hope my work would speak for itself, but it actually helps if you shout just a little bit about it, because again, the noise is really rife out there and people might miss what you're actually doing. So don't be afraid to champion yourself as well as all the other amazing people around you. So
and it's a really good analogy for a podcast called Passion to Power, because you pretty much paralleled all of those thoughts, you know.
That's why I love this. I was like, you had me at the title, to be honest. There you go.
Thank you. I know we're going to be talking a lot more about book publishing, artist development. Hopefully I'll get to meet you both in Nashville and again in London.
So thanks very much for listening to this episode, and please share all the episodes with your friends and colleagues. We appreciate your ratings and comments on Apple Podcasts and on social media. If you'd like more information about our programs and our special people and projects, please access www.morezap.com, More Zap Productions for Talent and Literary. And if you'd like to book a special one-on-one coaching or a group clinic or workshop, please access passion-power.com, and you can fill out our form there and make a request. Thanks again.